Chester's mill strikes again.
Doesn't make any sense.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 76 for the week of June 29th, 2015. I am Purple Crystal High Definition Television Set Array David T. Cole, and I'm here with dead sister Sarah D. Bunting.
That's crazy. Oh, wait, who cares?
Worthless trauma counselor Tara Ariano.
Your parents don't need you, Joe.
And well-compensated author Nick Rhinewell Jones.
Just leave the option money on the nightstand, no kissing.
Hello, everybody. Welcome. As the intro suggested, we're going to be talking about Under the Dome, but we'll get to it. First, welcome back to the show, Nick Rhinewell Jones.
Thank you very much. Great to be here, as always.
Well, you said that when you found out that we were discussing a two-hour Under the Dome, you were not so thrilled. So thank you for coming anyway.
I took one for the team.
Just a quick show note up at the top. I don't know if you're going to drop in the... No? Okay. I thought you were going to play the music. Okay, sorry. Just a note that because of the holiday, not only are we doubling up, we're pre-recording a podcast right after this that will drop next week, but we are doing no minis this week and no minis next week. So sorry, but you know, it is the holiday. So thank you for your patience.
America is not mini, and in honor of her birthday.
Exactly. Yes. So let's get into it. Here we go.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now
Domer.
Having listened to it.
Everyone here is now Domer for having watched the two-hour season three premiere of Under the Dome, which the fact that there is a season three is outrage number one. The reason that we have Nick here is because he was gracious enough to sub for one episode on it last year normally, and continuing, I am the person who is covering the show like a chump. I already had my 85 image thought dump when I put my particles post up on previously.tv on Friday. So I'll throw it open to the rest of you. What did you guys think?
It might have been the dumbest 2 hours of network television I've ever seen in my life. And that's not hyperbolic.
No.
Like, it was truly total nonsense. They were like just throwing shit on the wall and see what would stick. Spoiler, nothing. And it was just like, it just seemed like nobody was really paying attention to anything in the writer's room. And they're just like, I don't know. There's like crystals and there's a new lady and she's kind of like a watcher from the comics and she's watching TV on her purple crystals and
she's not new.
And there's a white world of mist now and people go into it and they're not in the dome anymore. Mm-hmm. This all making sense to everybody, right? Guys. Yeah. All right. Let's do it. Here you go. Les Moonves. Roll it.
Yep. Pretty much.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm sorry. Enraged that this exists.
Yeah.
Like, legitimately livid. Like, my notes in several places have, like, physical little holes in the paper where I, like, wrote a character's name down and then stabbed it with a pen repeatedly. I have not been a big defender of Uncle Stevie, Stephen King, in the past, but this is a disgrace to his entire legacy, to other people named Stephen, to kings, to having eyeballs. It is so careless. It is so stupid. Everything about it is such a C-. Like, it's not even a glorious fiasco.
No.
It just kind of sucks, and everyone's forehead is a little too big. Excuse me, but there's one overhead shot where the entire town, like, literally the entire town is wearing jeans from the exact same bright blue dye lot.
Yep.
Like, nobody got trapped under the dome with khakis or a mini or some leggings, something. Like, big things, small things, everything stinks.
Nick?
Well, I feel bad for even calling it dumb. Like, I just feel like there's like a very meta quality that like everyone who is working on the show is also trapped. And they're just kind of like, I don't feel like anybody doing anything on that show wants to be doing it.
Yeah.
Like the actors, the writers, like you said, like Eric LaSalle comes in and you can just see him being like, okay, well, here's what I got to do to get another paycheck. Let's maybe I can get an indie film off of this or something.
Like, okay, like, people have child support. Who's your child, Eric LaSalle? Grease? No, I mean, there's a couple of people that I'm like, seriously, what are you doing here? Like Helgenberger, yeah. Aisha Hines. Yeah. I thought they were better than this, but it's like, ladies, what are you doing? Like, is your agent, are your agents not under the dome? Come on.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it must be worth it to do a network show, even this one, like paycheck wise. But there was a point where I turned to Dave when we were watching this and like, this is a show. This is a network yeah. show. This, as David Letterman used to say, may he rest in peace as a TV personality, but he would be like, this is the only thing on CBS right now. And it's true under the dome too. Like, someone watched this. So think of how many people had to be part of putting this together. And all of them are like, yep.
It, what it reminds me of is when I was a kid, and I'm old, so when I was a kid, the big thing you would play with were Star Wars action figures, original ones. Mm-hmm. And when you would, you know, make up your own stories with your, you know, six or seven action figures, basically, you know, you were sort of having this OCD nonsensical story. Like, here's Luke, and he just punched out a stormtrooper, but look out, here's Darth Vader. He was right behind that stormtrooper waiting for you to knock him out. And then, uh-oh, here comes Millennium Falcon. It now has a tractor beam that beams Luke up. That never happened in the movies, but that's fine. Boop, 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 boop. Yeah. And I feel like that's how they're writing this show. It's just like some, you know, 10 guys in a room playing with action figures, and now we're in a white room, and there's full of mist, and now we're out of the dome. No, you're not. Yes, I am. Pew, pew, pew. You missed. No,
and
I
didn't.
You don't
have, like, a big round ball to use as a planet, so you may use one of those plastic ponies that yeah. you had the set of. Just sure. theorizing here. But, yeah, that was, what, grade three?
Yeah.
But,
well, yeah,
but
I feel
Dave,
bad for the writer's assistant that had to go with all the rest of the writers when they went on their, like, ayahuasca retreat and write down everything that came out of their mouths.
But, Dave, describing it that way makes it seem like Axe Cop, and it's not even as good as Axe Cop in terms of, like, the rigidity right. And seriousness with which plotting is taken care of.
Right. Okay, so it's that thing, but the kid involved, like, got to go to like 1 year of prep school, then his parents couldn't afford it anymore, and now he's doing those stories. So it's like, oh, Luke.
Yeah, you'll notice that we're not talking about the plot of the episode because it's 100% immaterial.
I don't know what it
all
was.
That like the entire, those 2 hours were just wiped out by the last minute of the episode. So it's like yeah. none of that matters at all.
It was a very strange choice for the premiere. Like, you could see them yeah. doing that like late in the season when they're like out of ideas and they're like, well, we just need something to fill time that doesn't really matter. But like, to start off the season with that is kind of announcing, like, yeah, we don't have much here.
Right. But they, I mean, the logical fallacies that were that went into it, like someone had an iPhone 6 Plus in this fantasy world that they were all matrixly living in. And there was a whole bunch of talk about Nori like leaving Chester's Mill because I guess everyone who writes on the show now forgot she's not actually from there. She just got trapped there when the dome came down. Like there was no part of it that made sense. And on top of all that, they just were like layering more mythology on without, as I said in my post, like a fucking tinfoil ball, without answering any of the other questions that they've raised in the previous two seasons of the show that already exist.
That have taken place over like a total of 3 weeks in real time, right?
Right. And then, yeah, yeah. In the opening credits, it now says 3 weeks ago, the dome came down. Like, it's so, I guess it's still 2013 in this world. Which makes the iPhone 6 Plus all the more impossible, but whatever.
Well, in whatever year it is, if you've been, whatever, shot in the leg or domed in the leg or whatever the fuck happened to Woolly-headed Lefevre's leg, yeah. when you grab a leg and wince in pain, professional fucking actor, yeah. try grabbing the correct leg, the one with the bloody bandage
on
around
the outside
of your identical to everyone else's jeans.
Yeah, they've made it easy for her by putting the bandage on the outside, so it's impossible for her to forget, you would think. But yeah, it also only, nope. it only hurts sometimes. It's very,
yeah, the band-aid on the outside
sitting,
of the jeans.
Sometimes when she's walking, doesn't matter.
The band-aid on the outside of jeans really is telling of the show as a whole and the effort put into everything involved with it. It's just slapdash.
In the sense of none.
Yes, thank yes. you.
Thanks just spelling
for,
it out.
Thanks for filling that in.
Look,
I know we're all
wanna,
domer, but we're not that domer.
I just don't want there to be any doubt about anyone's opinion of this episode.
But why?
Does this make any sense? Tara, don't follow this, but does what happened in the first episode actually make sense if you've been following this for reasons unknown? it seemed so random to me.
No, I mean, they've already established in season two that there's this chasm. There's obviously, as you do, there's a series of connected underground tunnels that originate under the school, which is why everything happened at the school in season two, because they could afford one set. And then you get to a certain point in these tunnels, and then there's just a void. And if you throw yourself into the void, you come out on the other side in Zenith, this other town. And apparently, if you do that, you really do end up there, and it's fine. Like they established in season two that life has continued to go on. It's not like everyone in the dome is in some kind of like mass fantasy purgatory or something. Like there was a billboard up in Zenith that was like day 17 of the dome. Like this, but which is even more infuriating to me because it's like, why would the whole dome not be surrounded by like news channels like this? If this happened in real life, it would be the biggest, craziest fucking thing that ever happened.
There would be food trucks.
There would be all kinds of trucks. Like there would be no one would ever leave the outside of the dome. And like everything in the entire world would be trying to figure out why this happened and how to get it off. But like in this show, all that's happening is like the dome is just sitting there and the rest of America is going on like this is totally normal and not a big deal, but whatever. And then you can get back into the dome by going into a red door on Barbie's dad's property, obviously. Uh-huh. And you would know that if you had if you had looked at any of Pauline, I forget Big Jim's last name, but whatever, Junior's mother's terrible, shitty outsider art, because she has...
Rennie, and you. Someone fucking kill me that's taking up a brain
cell. We were watching the premiere, I was like, I don't even remember anybody's name on this show except for Big Jim. Like, I in my notes, it has Big Forehead Girl for Nori, because I could not remember her name at all.
Mine too.
None of it makes sense, and none of it has ever been explained. And now we know that Melanie is not actually Melanie, the girl that I was calling Drownsy, because it took like 7 episodes for them to give her a name in season 2 after she appeared. People on the board still call her that, so you're welcome. But now we learn that she's just using that girl's face, which, why? Like, she was already a reanimated corpse from like 25 years ago, so that still makes no sense.
She wasn't passing, yeah.
Why don't you just pick a live person and have her be your avatar? It would be less weird and people would be less freaked out about the supernatural aspects of it, but whatever! Like, but whatever is all of these plot lines end.
That's the new name of the show, but whatever.
But whatever.
Yeah, it's total nonsense.
I would ask what's going on with the occasionally murderous butterflies, but I don't care.
Nobody ever expects the butterflies.
Like, are they her minions? I don't care. Drownsy killed Chris Cooper. That's not actually Chris Cooper, Tara tells me. Oh, wait, I don't care. Sorry, Brett Cullen. Don't care.
Those butterflies are feeding some visual effects artist children, okay?
Yeah, the butterflies were good in previous seasons, so I don't know why they're evil now. I assume it has something to do with the amethyst array of display screens that Drownsy now has underground.
Well,
I just said that sentence. Like, yeah. Pick one part of it that makes sense. You can't.
So, if you never watched but you're still listening to this segment and it makes no sense, it is pretty good indication of what you'll get if you actually watch the show.
Yeah.
Which is why it is so enraging that A, it is still on.
Yeah.
And B, network television, and like that as a whole, the society hasn't like, you know, kind of just risen up and like all agree that we cannot watch this. That said, I really enjoy how angry it makes you, so I'm glad it exists for that. Are we still gonna do We Are All Domer segments?
Sure. I mean, I am still watching it, yeah. So I mean, right. I guess I might as well. But yeah, it's we were listening to give you an idea of how far behind we are on Never Not Funny, another excellent podcast. We were listening to one this weekend where Matt was talking about the series finale of The Newsroom. So that was what, like December? Anyway, and I was thinking as I was listening to it, like, because it was all about how he went on this like Twitter tirade about what a load of shit that finale was, which it was. But I was thinking about like the difference of watching that show versus watching Under the Dome, because I hate them both and I can't stop watching either of them now. And like now it's like in both of those cases, it's the thing where it's like, you will not outlive me. I will outlive you and have to see how you're going to die. But like The Newsroom, at least even though every decision was bad, you could tell there was some idea behind it, even if the idea was misguided and stupid.
The person who was writing it wanted to be writing it.
Yes. With this, it's just like, let's try what, who cares? Like, there's no continuity, not even just like from episode to episode, but like from the start of an episode to the end. Like, people's motivations totally change. You don't know who's trying to kill who. Somehow, since season one, like when Junior had locked up dead Angie, who all of a sudden her death is such a huge fucking deal, which she was dead for most of last season and Joe didn't give a shit, but who cares? Exactly. But now Junior is a good guy. Like, it's just nothing makes sense.
He's arced in 3 weeks. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. It's crazy. I'm really curious to know, because everyone on the board seems to also be like, I don't understand what's happening. What even is this? Like, are watching it in the same way I do. So I would love to know, like, are there people who just watch it and think it's good? There must be.
And you meet those people in the dark alley. You're never seen again. All right.
In the castle. Well, they live, thank you all. I think you have this relationship with it that I had with the Following, which definitely was like, Poehead and I are sticking this out to the very end, and thank God it got canceled finally. But at least it did have moments where it was like, this is not a good outcome. I think this is not what people wanted for this to be. But at least there was some effort, like the effort mostly failed, but there were good actors. There was an attempt to direct them. There was also a lot of, like, you know, characters we didn't care about, ridiculous plot twists, nobody ever using a gun. Everybody had to be gutted. I mean, look, it was a bad show. It deserved to get canceled. But at least, like, someone sort of had hopes for it at some point. This is what makes me mad about the show. That it's like perfectly good television gets canceled or like sent to Netflix and has to sort of go hat in hand begging to a streaming service to live. And this is like the Marie dumbest of TV. It just keeps going. Like, I'm not even sure there's writers. They may be like, why don't you just improvise? Like, okay.
Yeah. It's that's the shocker of all. Like, that it was supposed to be a limited series. It's continued to exist. And no one really seems excited about it, and yet it's a success. Like, it just makes you not understand the TV business even more.
Well, I mean, yeah, if it wasn't succeeding as well, I'd say it's a good cautionary tale for just like the very outdated network scheme of just like chasing eyeballs and ad money as opposed to like trying to make something interesting and consistent.
Yep. Well, I still blame the 2013 Time Warner CBS standoff for getting me into the show in the first place. But now I'm in it forever, so thanks a lot. I am trapped in the dome.
Hellos, this is Gordon Lightfoot on behalf of Brendan Foundations. I am Dave and Lady Day's faithful Doug. When Dave looked for Doug's 2 years ago, he's not go to terrible poopy mills, but he gets me from Doug Rescue. I'm not perfect back then's. But we clicks and we works on my behaviors. And now I good Doug. And I guess to live in Hawaii. That not bad deals. If you want faithful companions and you smart and no like cats, contact your local humane societies or dog rescues. You find all sorts of Dougs. Big Dougs, small Dougs, poor breds twos. If you jerk, they no give you Dougs, so jerks no needs applies. To starts off on roads to Doug fun, go to petfinders.com.
Petfinder.com.
Oh, yes. I not say that right. I think she would be impressed that I talks at all. Dukes not usually do that. Okay, that's it for nows. I see you at the beach.
God damn it.
Oh, God.
Is this worse than jazz?
All right, everybody. The world's been buzzing about it since this last week, and we really have to figure it out. Is this worse than jazz?
If you ever bully or hurt anybody again, I'll come back and butt-fuck your father with your mom's headless corpse on this goddamn lawn.
All right, the question before us is, your father being butt-fucked with your mom's headless corpse worse than jazz? I throw it to all of you. Any takers?
Is the actual, you're talking about the actual act, or is the threat alone worse than jazz?
I think the act is what we're talking about. Your father actually being butt-fucked with your mom's headless corpse.
Well, I'm going to say it's not worse than Jazz, because I think if somebody actually attempted it, they would quickly have to abandon the project as impracticable. And even though a lot of Jazz is as well, people still push through and achieve Jazz in as much as it is an achievement.
Yeah.
So that's my vote.
Uh-huh. Okay. Anybody else?
I mean, I have sort of qualifying questions, but I'm not going to ask them because I don't really want to think about my parents.
No, I think you have to.
Yeah, no idea.
In this position. Uh-huh. Okay, here's a question. Yep. Is it merely the attempt that must be made or to buttfuck my father with my mother's headless corpse? Because my parents are formidable, and I don't think they would allow that to happen. But is it like the mere thought of the undertaking, or it actually has to happen?
I think the understanding is it has happened. It's not you doing it. It's just that, you know,
it's
much
done.
Like the bully in the scene, you are witness to your father being butt-fucked with your mother's headless corpse. And the question before us is that you being witness to this terrible act?
Okay.
Is that worse than Jazz?
Well, given that I'm not like in the lady or the tiger position of actually choosing this, like right. It's happening whether I like it or not.
Oh, yeah. You got no say.
And given Tara's extremely strong argument that it is impracticable, I feel that it will not last nearly as long as the average Jazz. And it is therefore not worse than Jazz.
Wow.
I am sorry, Dad and Ma.
The average Jazz, like it's a unit of Jazz.
A thing of Jazz.
Well, I need to voice the lone dissenting opinion here, because I'm gonna focus on the part that says on this goddamn lawn.
Oh.
See, it would be one thing if it was being done in private,
right?
But if it's out on the lawn,
this is a good point.
It, then
up.
Not only do I have to deal with the aftermath of that horrible incident, but I would also have to deal with being Twitter shamed for it. So
yeah.
I'm gonna say yes, worse than Jazz.
Yeah, it is not an anonymous act. It is there in front of you.
Here's the
lawn is the amphitheater, and your got front row seats, my friend.
Side question. Would you get shamed more for having that happen on your lawn, Nick Reinwald Jones, resident of Los Angeles, or for watering your lawn at this point in time?
Oh, good question. Mm. And they could confuse the blood for water, possibly, and I don't know, call
the authorities about it. What is your judgment?
Well, much like Jazz, and you know, you have to listen to the notes you don't hear. The real trick to considering whether your father is being, you know, the terribleness of him being butt-fucked with your mom's headless corpse is the holes they're not filling, and you know, the ones that you'd be thankful for. And you know, it could be much worse. You know, there could be a lot more things happening, and for that, I think we're grateful. And for that reason, I would say that your father being butt-fucked with your mom's headless corpse is not worse than Jazz. All right, everybody, it's time for a contest to lighten the mood. We have...
My mood's pretty light.
We have two justified Blu-ray collections, the whole series, correct?
No, it's the final season.
Oh, it's just the final season. Okay. We have two to give away. Blu-ray, high def. It's awesome. So here's what you have to do. You have to send us audio of you singing your uninformed version of the hard-to-understand lyrics in the Justified theme. And as an illustration, I'm going to try one right now. God have mercy on our souls. This is going to be worse than Jazz. On this lonely road, trying to make it home, doing the llama on some pick-up float, son. A flagging for the soul, gargantuan. You try to Bogart, fart back, then go hard. On this lonely road, trying to make it home. Dude, it Obama loading pits on flow buns.
Also not worse than Jazz.
All right, send your version of that impossible-to-know theme to ehg@previously.tv. Two winners will each get the Blu-ray and the honor of having this audio played, whether you like it or not.
Oh,
on the
excellent.
Show.
I was going to say, as a consolation prize, could you cut together some of the non-successful ones so that we have a full version with the
Absolutely. Version. Do not send your submissions if you don't want them on air, because that's where they're going.
since we are taking off next week, I wanted to make everyone aware of something that is still upcoming. The Key and Peele season 4 premiere airs July 7th. We got screeners of the first 3 episodes. We devoured them all. Normally, I try and like do a slow drip, but we couldn't because it's so good. And there's no way to talk about it without giving away the jokes. So I will just be very vague. There's one sketch that takes place on an airplane, features Lem from Better Off Ted, that is fall off the couch funny.
Yeah.
We had to pause it because we were laughing so hard. Yeah. And it closes out with something that's reminiscent of their Les Mis spoof from season 3, a musical number that's just really brilliant, smart, and savage and great. And this is one of the best shows on Comedy Central, definitely one of the best sketch shows in full stop on television right now. If you are not watching Key and Peele, you are dumb. Watch Key and Peele.
Nick.
So Amazon is having one of its pilot seasons for its kids shows right now, and I was tipped off to one of them by my friend Rosanna, who is a music supervisor on this show. It is called A History of Radness, and I watched it the other day. It's really good. It's about two middle school-aged kids who move from Seattle to somewhere in the middle of nowhere. And it's kind of like the flip side of what you expect from like the out of the fish out of water kids, because like they're the cool kids and everyone at the school is lame. And they were in a band in Seattle and they want to start a new band, but like they don't think they'll find anyone for it. And it's just like it's a fun show. It is not like it definitely, if you're watching it as an adult, it does not feel like overly cloying or anything. The kids are good actors and charming, and they actually, you know, it's like Glee style. They're actually performing for real. They're real musicians and singers. It is definitely unlike Glee in almost every other way. It doesn't have all the ridiculousness. And it's just, you know, it's a well done, fun show. And if you have kids, I'd recommend it. If you don't have kids, I'd recommend it.
All right. When the kids move away from Seattle and they're wherever they are, is one of the fish out of water things that they don't know where all the homeless people are in the new town?
Maybe in episode 2. We'll see.
Is one of the other fish out of water things they're always trying to throw fish at people?
Nice. Sarah.
First of all, I'd just like to say that I enjoy my wife's pronunciation of the word premiere very much.
Oh,
you can hear
you.
The teeny little accent in it, and it makes me smile. So welcome to another mini episode of Buncey's Prisoner of Live Sports Ad Corner. Today's topic is the Humera commercial, particularly the one with Manic Pixie Dream Bangs Lady doing all sorts of fun things, because now her moderate to severe Crohn's disease has been put in remission by Humera.
I 100% thought until you said that it was moderate to severe plaque psoriasis, because I cannot keep my medication straight.
This is plank number one of my problem with these ads generally, is that no one says they have moderate to severe anything. And could the writers please find a way to communicate that while this spokes model might have moderate or severe plaque psoriasis or Crohn's or whatever it is, mm-hmm. it's not a range. Or like sometimes there's a flare up, and Humera in particular, there's more than one ad.
Right.
There's like three,
yeah.
And one guy could have the severe kind and whatever. So this lady makes up for it by having seriously the cutest jackets. She has like three or four all adorable jackets. I posted a piece as we record this earlier today. And if anyone can tell me how to get that little blanket print motorcycle jacket she's wearing, I will be forever in your debt, and I will give you a mini and many Sarah points. But yeah, the writers of this ad found a way to not exactly admit that side effects include blood cancer by saying like lymphoma has happened.
Uh-huh.
Like this is literally the text. Like,
you don't want that.
I've also like lightning happens and like buckets. What are you talking about? Like either say it could cause lymphoma or don't say that. But so if you're that good at being, you know, carefully, legally precise, but vague, I'm sure you can find a way to say moderate or severe, not both.
Wait, before we move on. Can we all agree that there's never been a better drug side effect in a drug ad on TV than the one that warned that you might have gambling problems?
Really?
Yeah, there's
serious?
Some like,
what
yeah,
was that if, for?
I think, I want to say it was, someone will tell me in the credits, I want to say it's for Chantix. I know that was one where definitely it was like
Chantix is
a whole
is
bunch
that,
of people killed themselves.
Yeah,
don't
Chantix
sue
is
me,
the,
but that's what I heard.
Yeah, Chantix is the one that people say that that's, messes that's with
the,
your mind.
Yeah, that's a quit smoking one, but it might have the gambling problem, but it might have been like a sleep. It might have been a sleep aid.
Huh.
But yeah, I remember that. Like, what a weird thing. I mean, I guess it's related to impulse, but anyway, moving on.
All right, I have two shows that I'm currently enjoying I want to talk about. The first of all is the British show that is currently being rebroadcast on AMC, Humans.
Heard of them.
Which is an ongoing joke at our house every time the ad or credits or we start a show. That must be said. I encourage you to do the same out there. It is the story of robots and kind of an Asimov future where robots are now serving us and they have all these safeguards to keep them from going all robot apocalypse on us. And
I'm not sure it is the future though, because in one of the episodes, that we
like
watched
tomorrow.
Yeah. In one of the episodes that we watched last night, there was like a calendar that had it that said 2050.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're using current tech and everything. Yeah, you're right. It's, but it's a story of like domestic robots that do stuff for you. And, you know, and all the questions that you would suspect a show about robots would bring up, they are bringing up. But it's smartly done. It's interesting. I think a lot of the people that were, it feels much like kind of the Utopia kind of vibe to it.
It's from the same, it's also from Channel 4. Same again, Black Mirror is them.
I get that same vibe from it. Utopia, we're talking about the British cult show, not the
Fox one.
Reality show. Certainly, I noticed that the guy does the music for both of them, but it has that sort of feel to it. It's moving at a great pace. It's bringing up interesting stuff, and it's just sort of like small stories and a, you know, with larger implications, you know, sort of, you know, questions in the background. Anybody else watch it besides me and Tara? No, just
not so far.
I haven't watched it yet, but I'm looking forward to, I feel like this is AI.
Yeah.
But without all the annoying Osment et al. And Spielberg-y. Yeah.
For sure.
Stuff.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, I my worry when I found out it was a British import was like, for some reason I thought because it was playing on AMC, it's going to be all British people pretending to be American. It's not. They're just British. It takes place in London. But yeah, the acting is great all the way across the board in all storylines. There's sort of four storylines that are proceeding parallel, but they're all really equally interesting and great. And this, we watched the next two episodes because we flew to England where they've already aired. And shit gets really real in a very exciting, like unsettling, cool way. So without saying too much about it, it's great.
Yeah, but even like the smaller stories, you know, so far before I'm sure all these characters start to converge. But one is William Hurt as earlier model inventor of these, they call them synths.
Yep.
And he is assigned a robot for home care. By
she's
the government.
She's the female prime minister from The Thick of It, by the way.
Oh, right. Yeah, I knew I recognized her. And
wasn't William Hurt also in AI? Yeah.
Was he?
Yeah.
Wasn't he a scientist in AI?
He loves it. He loves the robots. Yeah. Anyways, but that story's great about, you know, just sort of like where
really
her
sad.
Role as a government, you know, enabled robot to take care of him ends and his freedom, you know, can start. So.
Yeah, he's trying to hide the fact that his original robot is really malfunctioning, but he's still very emotionally attached to him, so he has to like hide him and conceal the fact that he's really rapidly falling apart.
Yeah, so you get to see all you know, you get to see the robot stuff, you get to see, you know, what the government's doing, you get to see, you know, the family environment. Anyways, it's really interesting so far.
I know what you're thinking.
I think it's
I think it's only 8 episodes. But is that what you're
going to
say?
It's a remake of a Swedish
show? Swedish show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some versions of that are on YouTube. I assume there's subtitled, but we haven't really looked into it that far.
Anyways.
One last thing. Yeah. I know you're thinking, dear listener, do people try and fuck robots in this show?
Oh, yeah.
The answer is yes. That happens right in episode 1. They do not waste any time.
Got to fuck something. All right. And the other one I want to talk about is a show that Mark Blankenship was pitching as a get on board. And I totally agree. That's Deutschland 83, which is
so good.
Sundance channel. And it is a Cold War spy thriller. It's a story about just some dude in East Germany that is conscripted to spy in West Germany and become sort of a personal assistant to a general there. After the real guy is assassinated and he's put there. So it's a bit of a fish out of water tale, but it's also like, it just feels like a great 70s spy thriller. You know, before every spy thriller had to be like the world, you know, there is a mad scientist who has all the satellite lasers trained on watching DC. It's none of that. It's just like it's Day of the Condor kind of stuff. You know, it's like that kind of level. It's just nice to see a story where it's just about a guy has to get into a room and take pictures of these files. And it's just like, that's the set piece. And it's just really well done. It's really tense.
Yep.
It's just well done. I really enjoy the pauses for a moment to get the right word so that guy doesn't email me. Tradecraft, not spycraft.
Isn't that guy Nick Reinwell Jones?
No.
but I was only thinking it. I wasn't saying it.
But it's interesting to after, you know, being, you know, all this, you know, the Mission Impossibles, the James Bond stuff, to see
the aliases, which we'll be talking about.
Yeah, to see a spy show, you know, with 80s tech and, you know, just all the challenges involved, and the acting's great. I love the fact that it's subtitled. When the people need to speak German, they're all speaking German.
Yeah, it's a German show.
That's not accurate because, as we all know, they just speak English in a German accent when they're going to, but yeah, I'll allow it.
Or in an English accent.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. But if you like the Americans, you should give this a shot because it's the same sort of thing.
Yeah, it has.
Except it's just thing. One guy. They're not a couple.
Right. But anyway, so Humans and Deutschland 83, both recommended by me to you. Mm-hmm. All right. It's time for a sponsor. And this one's a good one. Ears up, everybody. Sarah, take it away.
Alrighty, this ad space was generously donated by the Brandon Foundation. And the ad itself comes from our great good friend, Dan Rogge, who says, quote, "I'm turning my marathon fundraiser for 2015 into a big blowout. I love raising money for this excellent cause, but I really love winning. So my goal is to blow the doors off of what I raised last time and to put to shame everyone else on the team." Goals! "Basically, I'm running the New York City Marathon," so this is not a metaphor, by the way, "for the second time to raise money for the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. I already made an adorable video explaining the reasons for this cause in particular." Dave?
"Hi, I'm Samantha."
"And I'm Ethan."
"Look how cute we are." "Back in 2006, our dad was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and as a family, we said, 'Oh no!'"
"I didn't say anything. I was like 4.
"Since then, our family's charity, Team Sterling, has participated in numerous walks, runs, and bike rides to raise money for MS research. And together, we've raised over $15,000 for people with MS."
"Our Uncle Dan ran the New York City Marathon in 2013, and thanks to your support, he raised over $7,000.
So he's running the same marathon this year and fundraising again."
"A lot of you gave money last time. What's stopping you from doing it this time? What changed your mind? Do you love MS now or something?"
"Of course you don't. You hate it. So click the link on this page to donate now. Look how cute we are. Thanks."
We'll embed the video in the show notes for this episode, of course.
That is indeed adorable. I am adoring it right now. So we at EHG talked to Dan, and here is the scoop. Here's what might motivate you to donate if the adorability wasn't enough. The top extra hot great donor will get to force Dan to make a real canon pitch for any episode of television on a future extra hot great, no matter how implausible. That's the episode. It's fairly plausible that there will be a future extra hot great. If Dan reaches his stretch goal of $7,000 this year, he will provide us with another Lost in Translation game time, which we loved playing and you loved listening to, which we will use for a future listener game time episode. We'll randomly pick 3 people from the donor list to play. When you donate to Dan's page generally, please note if you want in on the listener game time. To make your donation, go to previously.tv/runDanRun. That's RUNDANRUN. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Brandon.
Season 3 of Alias is a rough one, but I definitely have a soft spot for it. It knew when to throw out and wrap up the mysterious missing 2 years plotline and delivered some pretty solid spy versus spy stuff in the back half, including one of my favorite episodes of the whole series, Season 3, Episode 19, entitled Hourglass. When the episode begins, the season-long baddie, the Covenant, is finally revealing its endgame. The episode opens with Jack having an IM chat with his ex-wife, cum Russian spy, Irina, asking what she might know about someone called the Passenger. Irina responds by deleting her user account and vanishing, so Jack knows something is up. We then switch to Nepal, where blonde, evil, pretty boy Sark, who's easily the coolest fake Brit this side of Spike, is about to interrogate David Carradine, who appears as one of the followers of the ancient prophet Milo Rambaldi, which, in case you forgot, is what the whole freaking show is about. Sark puts a gun to Carradine's head and makes his demands clear.
I have a great respect for the followers of Rambaldi, and I know you to be a truly wise man. But if you do not tell me where to find the passenger in 5 seconds, I will kill you.
Exactly 5 seconds later, Carradine grabs Sark's gun and disassembles it, Jackie Chan style, and whips his cocky British ass to the floor before telling him he can't help. Alas, the scene ends with Sark's evil, informal mother-in-law, Mrs. Reed, shooting a trank dart into Carradine's throat and ordering Sark to bring him along. Meanwhile, Jack and Sydney head for an L.A. rooftop to meet with Vaughn, who has finally realized what the audience has known for 8 episodes.
You were right. Lauren's the mole. She works for the Covenant.
We should talk to Dixon and figure out a way to handle this.
Oh, I know how to handle this.
You will act like nothing has changed.
Okay, what's plan B? Because that's not going to happen.
Given that the Covenant is ahead of us in the search for the passenger, she cannot detect the slightest alteration in your relationship. I'll inform Dixon. We'll secure the agency, limiting her access to classified documents.
Okay, stop. My wife betrayed me. She betrayed all of us. You can't expect me to pretend that never happened.
I'm not sure you have a choice.
Why is that?
Because you're the one that married her.
Oh, snap.
Sick burn.
It is never not fun when Spy Daddy lays down the law on this show, and it goes without saying that Sydney has the best resting bitch face during this entire conversation. Vaughn returns to the office, forced to act like everything's normal, and the spy team is sent to Mongolia to rescue David Carradine from the Covenant. Because of reasons, they decide to chase the convoy down on horseback, resulting in quite a fun action scene, as well as, unfortunately, David Carradine's death by Sark's shotgun blast, which leads to a major deathbed revelation about the passenger.
She is your destiny.
How is she my destiny? As a friend, as an enemy? Tell me that. Is the passenger my mother?
The passenger is your sister.
I was going to throw a dun, dun, dun in there for good measure, but I decided to just leave in the show's version of it because Giacchino's score is delightfully over the top at times like this.
True.
Jack informs Sydney that this hypothetical sister may be the result of her mother, Irina, having dirty, unfaithful sex with none other than Arvin Sloan 25 years prior. I'll pause a moment so Tara can go, ew, if she hasn't already. Sloan is currently in a prison cell awaiting execution, having been framed as a Covenant collaborator. Jack has already uncovered evidence of his innocence, but has opted not to share it because of the aforementioned wife-banging. Naturally, Sid goes to see Sloan for an awkward chat, and the two have a surprisingly nice moment about Sid's half-sister.
Sidney, the revelation that I had a child was overwhelming. I spent every possible moment from that day on searching for my child. While I was inoculating millions of people against diseases, I was simultaneously able to gain access to medical databases that identify people through their DNA. And I hoped that it would help me find my daughter. I failed.
You know she is the passenger.
I know. Also know the Covenant is after her. So please talk to your father. If he is concealing information that would exonerate me because I had an affair with Irina, convince him to give it to you. If not for my sake, then for your sister's.
It's important to keep in mind, both in this scene and for the rest of the episode, that Sydney hates Sloane with a fiery passion. He had her fiancé murdered and still maintains a weirdly paternalistic interest in her. And yet, as the episode goes on, Sydney develops a keen interest in saving his life. This is one of the more morally complex dilemmas the show has grappled with, and it handles it pretty nicely. The meat of the episode involves Vaughn playing his wife Lauren against the Covenant, and some pretty fun stuff, including the nervous antics of Marshall, who's completely unable to follow Jack's simple instruction that he act completely normal, as well as some uncomfortable moments with Sydney listening in as Vaughn has some diversionary sex with his wife to avoid getting busted stealing Covenant documents. Alias was always at its best when it was doing effective spy versus spy stuff, and forcing Vaughn into the show comfortable role of countering a double agent is especially fun. From the stolen documents, the CIA learns that the MacGuffin of the Week is a Rimbaldi artifact called the Hourglass, which will reveal the passenger's location to only one person, her father, Sloane, who's about to be executed. It's sitting in a Yakuza stronghold in Little Tokyo, and the CIA details a mission to go retrieve it, but they have to hurry, only 6 hours left till Sloane gets the axe. Sid confronts Jack about Sloane's innocence and bluffs him into admitting that he has, in fact, been withholding evidence that might exonerate Sloane.
Dad, are you really so bitter that you would sacrifice my sister in order to get payback for a 25-year-old affair?
Sloane deserves to die.
Yes, he does. But not for this.
Jack agrees to turn over the evidence, and Sid heads off to find the hourglass. But after a seemingly innocuous scene involving an oddly villainous Glenn Morshower, Jack does not turn over the evidence. Instead, he heads off to Sloane's cell to give him one last fuck you in the form of a glass of wine.
You're not going to help me. In April 75 in Saigon, you toasted Sydney's birth. Now that I know you have a daughter, I thought I should return the honor.
Irina betrayed both of us, Jack. She sought me out for information the same way she did you.
She was my wife.
She was a KGB spy who cared nothing about you or me. I've always thought that you understood your relationship with Irina was nothing more than that. But now that your schoolboy crush on the woman who destroyed your life is preventing you from saving mine, I will have to revise that assessment.
I knew the possibility existed that Sydney would be drawn into our world. But I often wondered why you were the one who sought her out, why you showed such paternal affection toward her. Now I know. You did it because you were angry and jealous and wanted to take away the one thing that was important to both Irina and me. You're right. I'm not going to help you. What you have done to my daughter is nothing compared to what I will do when I find yours.
Let me just pause and shiver a moment. Ron Rifkin and Victor Garber are so good on this show. Meanwhile, in Little Tokyo, Sydney has broken in and located the hourglass, only to find out that it's guarded by a motion sensor that was not on the schematic. Sid also learns over the radio that Sloane's execution is going forward as planned. Naturally, she responds by snatching the hourglass, pulling out dual submachine guns, and shooting her way out through 20 Yakuza bodyguards. Now, this is a bit of an action cliche, but I can't help but enjoy the character implications of Sydney fighting so hard to save the life of a man that she truly despises. Sloane gives a lovely death speech, and his execution goes forward to the tune of a pitch-perfect musical selection, Change in the House of Flies by the Deftones. I mention that because, unfortunately, the song has been changed in the Netflix version to some generic angry skater punk shit with some truly grating electronic percussion, which kind of ruins the awesome, creeping, imminent death vibe of the original song. So if you can, check this episode out on DVD to properly evaluate this moment, as it's one of the best musical cues in the series. The final notes of the song fade out as we hear the heart monitor beep solid, and lo, the Sloane is dead. Sid comes back with the hourglass and is super pissed at her father for the nth time in the series. Lauren calls her mother, Mrs. Reed, to confirm that Sloane is dead and learns that Vaughn played her and is ordered to take him out, setting the stage nicely for the next episode. We cut to the morgue and we find out that, dun-dun-dun, Jack's dosed Sloane with an antidote to the lethal injection in order to fake his death. Jack wakes Sloane up, tells him he still hates him, but needs him for now, and roll credits. The last 15 minutes of this episode just about knocked me flat the first time I saw them. The show does a masterful job of making the audience think that Sloane is actually going to die, even to the point of giving him multiple speeches about how much he loves his daughter. The parallels between Jack and Vaughn are also highlighted nicely in this episode, with both men forced to confront the results of their wives' respective betrayals. A key moment occurs early in the episode where Sydney asks Jack if Vaughn will be as bitter as he is in 30 years, to which Jack replies, absolutely. This episode is easily among the strongest of the series and is a culmination that is nearly strong enough to redeem an otherwise hit-or-miss season. Thank you for your consideration and keep up the good work.
Thank you.
That was Glenn.
Thank you, Glenn. Wow, that was so great.
It really was. Good job, Glenn. Yeah. And come read ads for us, seriously.
How much he lives his daughter.
vintage newscaster. I don't know. I enjoyed it.
Totally. Yeah, this is a great episode. He's right. Season three is rough, but this is a standout in the middle of all of that. I remember this watching it again brought back how much I hated Lauren/Melissa George, and she was, to harken back for one of our minis from last week, she was a deal breaker for me for a long time. She actually won me back over with her role on The Good Wife recently, where she was like really funny and good. So congratulations to her and on her finally learning how to close her mouth over her giant teeth.
Did you let her know? Yeah. Oh, she's back into good graces.
I actually did write about it.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, he's right. The horseback scene is ridiculous, but it is fun. I was struck watching it that how expensive it looks. Like it really, I don't know.
Really?
To me, it looked like it was.
Oh, no, I thought it looked expensive.
It looked like a cheap knockoff of the Raiders of the Lost Ark scene. It was obviously trying to be
whatever.
And communication,
it worked on me.
All right.
Yeah, all of the, I can't really improve on what Glenn said, except to add, everyone should have been able to tell that Lauren was evil from stuff like this.
That's 4th century Neapolitan Italian, which I love saying because it makes me think of ice cream. I mean,
Neapolitan ice cream is my favorite.
Neapolitan ice cream is no one's favorite. I am not a crackpot.
Marge, we need more vanilla chocolate strawberry ice cream.
Exactly. It's no one's favorite. Like, even wishy-washy people don't like it. Like, there's have one of those three flavors, but that is just dumb. That's all I have to say. Good job, Glenn.
Nick, you're a spy guy.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I was a huge, huge fan of Alias back in the day, and when I saw that this was going to be a season three episode, I was definitely wary about it because I remember just like how great the season two finale was and then going into season three and being like, oh, they really squandered a lot of what they had going there. I think season three was when J.J. Abrams kind of took a backseat. So that may be part of the reason for that. But I have to say, watching this one, it was not enough to sway me to the you know, season three having its moments. Like, it didn't feel quite like epic enough, and it's hard for, like, I mean, Alias was such a serialized show that it's hard for any individual episode to stand out much, except for like the Super Bowl episode or the Tarantino one, that really were like kind of self-contained adventures. Like this one, I mean, I wasn't going to rewatch the entire season just to get up to this point, but it felt like just, you know, another kind of moving pieces together, and it did, it had some nice moments, and, you know, God bless Ron Rifkin. Like, he was like, probably looking back on it now, he was really crucial to holding it all together because he just played it so well, no matter what they gave him to do. Like, he always sold it, even more than I would argue than Victor Garber, who, like, at times, like, still goes a little over the top, but
crackpot opinion alert.
Crackpot opinion. But
won't be the only one you'll hear.
But yeah, I mean, I ultimately, like, it was just, you know, it was too much just kind of, okay, you know, this thing and then that thing and this thing. And I don't know, it still left me a little bit cold, as did that entire season.
Sarah.
It's interesting because this, you know, this is not a perfect episode, but, it, you know, it's good as a canon prospect because it showcases everything that Alias does, which includes some of the things that it does crappily that make it like endearing to us, like Vaughn practically yelling that he's switching back to comms while quote unquote sneaking through a library, like, keep it down, spy dude. And then like an actual exchange verbatim, someone's coming, I'm almost done. Like, I mean, first of all, that's what she said, and second of all, like, that's in every episode. It's like Alias Mad Libs. There's a lot that's annoying in this episode, but speaking of I am not a crackpot, I never minded Lauren that much. She was a season obstacle.
Divorce.
And eventually she was removed, and I also thought Sark was annoying, and watching him get a fucking beat down from Keith Carradine was really satisfying for me. I totally forgot about that, and even though it didn't exactly end so well for Kung Fu Master, it was like, oh, that's nice. More punchy, more kicky. Yeah, there's a little overacting from Ron Rifkin. There's a little, like, some bombastic dialogue. But, like, the whole cast actually does a really good job of selling this stuff. And this episode may look may look better compared to the rest of its season, because even though I didn't mind Lauren, this should have, like, shit should have been set in motion to this effect way sooner,
yeah.
Like in the previous sweeps period. But I think this is not only everything that Alias does well, but everything that Alias does, period, like classic Flinkman, classic villainy, classic spy versus spy, and as every episode must have, the wondering where Sydney hid those giant fucking guns on that skimpy little outfit.
Yeah.
Like, get it, girl. Who cares? And then she, you know, double fisting the machine guns while Sloane is dying. I mean, yeah, I enjoyed it. And I think it's an excellent exemplar of the episode, even if it's not the best episode of the run.
I would also add, when you to your point that they should have gotten to it faster, this is definitely a show I feel like that would have been tighter if it had been a 13 episode a season.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Cable-y
or 15,
show.
Just something.
Yeah. Like, and so, you know, if someone out there has a lot of time, I would love to see a version of the re-edited Star Wars. Whatever.
Wow, that'd be a project.
That cuts down Alias, like, just gets it to the meat of it without all the stuff that felt like filler. Dave.
I agree with Nick. I think this generally that this was a fine episode, but not a great episode. It's not something I would probably put in up there in the canon. It has a lot of Alias-esque attributes, but then again, so do most episodes, because it's Alias. I think Victor Garber and Ron Rifkin are great together. I do love their scenes together. It is also nice to see Spy Daddy lay the smackdown on Vaughn, always.
Yeah. Yes.
So I really enjoyed that moment. I really enjoyed this mission. It was really great. I just think that this particular episode might be the best of season three, but that doesn't put it in the, you know, the canon for me, that there's plenty more that Alias has offered that I would put in front of this one. So let's put it to a vote. Sarah?
I am going to vote yes.
Tara?
Yeah, me too.
And Nick?
Nope.
I'm going to say no too. That means a split decision. It goes to the no camp. You have to get a majority. Yep. So I'm sorry. Alias season 3, episode 19, Hourglass. You are not in the extra hot rate canon.
You are, though, Glenn. Please submit again.
Yeah,
that was
great. You did a great job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about you being our ad spokesman.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
No.
All right, everybody. It's time for winner and a loser of the week. Sarah has our winner. Olé.
Yes, I do. It's Univision.
Nice.
Which dumped all Trump properties, Miss USA, Miss Universe, We Can't Miss You If You Don't Go Away, etc., after Trumpy said of Mexicans, among other things, that they're, quote, bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists. The whole thing about Donald Trump
shit,
lately.
Really?
And
yeah.
Yeah. It went on like that for a while. And then he's like, and then there are some good Mexicans, too. Just kidding. They're all terrible.
Don't help.
I have Mexican friends, says Donald Trump.
Jesus.
Yeah, makes it all okay.
Yeah.
I like my maid. Fuck off. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, like, I think everyone is very resolutely on the progressive side of the aisle, just trying to ignore the dude.
Yeah.
Because it's like, don't poke the crazy. Mm-hmm. But we're all kind of longing for a, like, cultural bitch slap to be administered, which I think Univision was more than happy to be like.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Allow nosotros. Fuck you.
And P.S. this just in on the Twitter feed. NBC has dumped Trump as well.
What?
Yep.
Wow.
Oh. Yeah.
Yep.
So, dang. Univision was on the right
says
side of history.
Says the designated recapper. Pretty happy not to have to sit through that shit anymore.
All right. Well, this is going to be kind of anticlimactic after that, but loser of the week, in addition to Donald Trump, is Hannibal. What now feels like extremely old news, though it happened since our last record. NBC has canceled Hannibal. Brian Fuller has said in interviews he thinks it has a 50-50 chance of being revived somewhere else. I'm sure that's true. Because even though it...
Well, now they have 2 hours on the schedule. Maybe they
I was going to say. They certainly could. So, yeah, we'll see what happens there.
Celebrity Hannibal. Every week, Hannibal stalks and
eats Donald Trump.
Eats a new celebrity. Oh my God, let's make that happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Do you know what time it is?
Cannibal Time?
Close. Game Time.
Oh!
Okay. This is the 11th Game Time of the season.
The season that wouldn't die.
Tara is still on the cusp of victory with 4 points. Sarah and Value Guest tied right behind her with 3 each.
Ooh, this is a big day for me.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Today we are playing Wrapping It Up from Ron Agner, who earns himself an extra credit. Redeemable for an extra hot great mini topic of his choosing. In Wrapping It Up, I will give you the title of a series finale. You have to tell me the show it's from.
Oh, shit.
God.
2 points for the right answer. If you're stuck, I'll give you the year of the finale, after which the correct answer is worth 1 point.
So if we guess
you may
on
remember, we did this game time about finales before, but we were using the final lines of the show.
Yes.
This is the titles. Yes. Question, Tara.
If we guess at 2, that's it, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just clarifying.
No problem. We have 48 questions today. Some questions involve the episode that was supposed to be the finale, but ended up not being the finale. I'll let you know when that is the case.
Okay.
You each get one of those.
Okay.
All right. Let's see who is going first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. Nick is our valued guest this week. So we'll go Nick, and then let's go to Sarah, and then Tara. Are we ready to play Wrapping It Up?
Yes.
All right.
Sort of.
Nick, are you ready? Here's your first question. The title of the finale, and you're all getting some easy ones to start off with to limber up those muscles.
Okay.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Your finale title is Forever Charmed.
Would that be Charmed?
Correct.
Well done.
For Sarah.
Thanks.
Boxing Daria.
Daria?
Tara.
Yeah.
The Mork Report.
Oh, is it Mork and Mindy?
Correct. Nick, here is your question. Here's yours that wasn't and didn't end up being the series finale, but was written as such. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Development Arrested.
Oh, yes. Well, that would be Arrested Development.
Correct. That was before the Netflix season. Sarah.
Yep.
Chuck versus the Goodbye.
Oh, Chuck.
Tara.
Yeah.
Voodoo Night. Voodoo Night.
Night, N-I-G-H-T?
K-N.
K-N-I-G-H-T.
Mm. Great question, Tara. Important information there. Voodoo Night.
Pertinent.
Pertinent.
Hint.
1986.
Does not help. Is it Forever Night?
Sarah, let her know.
Tara is the writer.
Stupid.
I thought you had it when you asked for the spelling.
Damn it, Canada.
No,
I'm punching
do.
My headphones right now.
And Sarah, can you explain to Tara what every episode of Knight Rider had in the title?
It was usually a play on some expression with Knight N in the title, except with a K.
Yeah.
Now I know.
All right, back to Nick.
Okay.
Getting a little tougher now. George decides to stay local where it is familia.
That's the title?
Yeah.
That's the George decides to stay local where it is familia.
Familia.
Hint.
2007.
I don't know.
The George Lopez Show.
Yep.
Ugh. Okay.
Okay. Ew. George Likes a Good War for Sarah.
George Likes a Good War?
Yep.
I will need a hint, please.
1995 was the finale for this show.
Oh, no. That doesn't help me at all. George Likes a Good... Well, it's not this, but I'm sick of guessing Benson, so the Jeffersons.
That was the George Carlin Show.
That was a show?
Yeah, George Carlin.
I remember that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. Tara?
Yes.
Norm versus Shelley's Old Flame.
The Norm Show?
Correct. Back to Nick. Last question before the score break. New York, I Love You, XOXO.
Gossip Girl.
2 points. Sarah, let our angel live.
Angel?
Charlie's Angel.
Yes!
Charlie's Angel. Like, all the episodes have the word angel in the title.
I seriously was like, it's a 50-50 shot between angel and dark angel, because apparently Charlie's Angels will not stay in my head. Yes.
Did this stay in your head, Tara?
We'll see.
I goodbye.
Almost human?
I Carly.
Oh, of course. Okay, right. Very tight game. Sarah and I are tied with 4 each. Nick has 6.
Okay. Round 2. I don't think you have any super gimmies, although there are some obvious ones. Through contest.
Oh, the dressing.
These are the easiest of the game, says Dave. If you don't get them, you're stupid. Nick.
Yep.
Goodbye, farewell, and amen.
7-7?
Incorrect. MASH. MASH. All right, Sarah. One for the road. One for the
one
road.
One for the pity. Road. Hint.
1993, the year of the finale. For what show?
One for the road. It was Northern Exposure.
Nick?
Cheers.
Cheers.
Oh, of course.
Tara.
Yeah.
Made in America.
The Sopranos.
Correct for 2 points.
Picky.
Nick.
Yeah.
The last one. The last one.
Friends.
2 points. Number 17.
Pretty Eagle.
Good night, Seattle.
Frasier.
2 points. Tara.
Yep.
Alex doesn't live here anymore.
Family Ties? Okay.
Nice pull.
Back to Nick. Fonzie's Spots.
Happy Days.
How did you get that?
I know, right?
Sarah.
Yep.
What kind of day has it been?
Multiple choices on this one.
Been. Yeah. What kind of day has it been? West Wing.
2 points. Felina.
Breaking Bad. Sandy.
Everybody hates the GED.
Everybody hates Chris.
Discos and Dragons.
Discos and Dragons. Really tempting to guess Game of Thrones, but I'm not going to. I'm going to ask for a hint.
All right. The year is 2000. Additional hint. All the episodes were titled as blank and blank.
Yep.
Yeah.
Discos and Dragons, year 2000, follows the format blank and blank.
Blank so, and blank.
2000 means it's not Simon and Simon. That's a bonus hint for you.
It's also not Kate and Allie. How about Phineas and Ferb?
How about Freaks and Geeks?
Ugh.
Okay, Tara.
Yep.
The 7 Wonders of the World Affair.
The 7 Wonders of the World Affair.
Affair, like I'm having an affair.
Yeah, I got it.
Okay.
Hint.
Let's see. 1968. Wait, additional hint. All the episodes were titled as The Blank Affair.
Okay. 1968. Mission Impossible?
Ooh, close. That is a good guess.
Is it The Man from U.N.C.L.E.?
It is The Man
Damn
from
it!
U.N.C.L.E.
Oh.
All right, back to Nick.
Yeah.
Objects in Space.
Firefly.
Nice. All right. Sarah, your finale title is The Truth.
Oh.
The Truth.
The Truth. I don't think year is going to help me, so I'm just going to guess. X-Files?
Nice.
That is worth 2 points. Tara?
Yep.
What kind of day has it been?
Is it the newsroom?
Jeez.
Back to Nick. Your last question before the second score break. Too Good Edith.
Can you what are the actual words?
Yeah. Too Good Edith.
T-O-O.
Yeah. There's no punctuation.
All in the
there.
Family?
Correct. You don't need it because you got it right. Everyone's waiting, Sarah. Everyone's waiting.
Everyone's waiting. Oh, God. 6 feet under.
Oh, nice.
Nice. Phew. Bring us into our score break.
Mm-hmm.
Constance Carmel Wedding.
Party down.
Correct. Nicely done. Let's hear them scores.
Still very tight. Sarah has 12. I have 14. Nick has 16.
All right. Great game.
Mm-hmm.
This is question 31 of 48. This is for Nicholas. changes, the big prom, the sex romp, the season finale. Changes, colon, the big prom, colon, the sex romp, colon, the season finale.
This was a show that had a lot of colons in its episode.
Can I have the year?
2003.
Oof.
I don't think he's watched this show.
Sex in the City?
Oh, he's watched Sex in the City. That's Clone High, Nick. Clone High. Have you watched Clone High?
Every time I get a Clone High question,
have you watched
it? Seen it.
No. Oh my God, we got to rectify that. All right, Let's talk off air.
Watch it before you watch Rectify.
Okay.
Well, he said Rectify.
I see. Steeled with a kiss. Sarah, Steeled with a kiss. Two E's and Steeled.
A total of three.
Oh,
total of three.
Thank you. Smallville.
Oh.
Remington like Steel.
Oh.
All episode had Steel in the title.
I like that guess, though, Sarah. Yeah.
All right. Person
Thank
to
you.
Person.
Oh, Mad Men.
The Promise. Or Nick, The Promise.
I feel like I know this one. Year?
This year, 2015.
Oh.
The Promise.
What else ended this year?
What did end this year? Got a guess?
Dexter?
Justified?
Justified, yep.
Oh!
I was going to say I wrote about it, but that would probably not narrow it down much.
One Last Ride, Tara.
Nope, Sarah.
Sarah, sorry. One Last Ride. My apologies. Sarah.
Sons of Anarchy.
Ooh, good guess. Also this year. Anybody got a guess?
No.
Parks and Rec.
Oh, I thought it was Sons of Anarchy too.
All right, Nick.
Nope.
That's Tara.
Me.
Nick,
nope.
Please let Tara know that it is her turn. Paris, May 1919.
1919?
Yep. No.
Oh, hint.
1993.
Oh, I think I know.
This is why I was excited to tell you, Nick, because I thought if anybody, you would get this.
Okay. Huh. That feels
bonus
like a hint
clue.
I should get.
Bonus clue. Yeah. Bonus.
Uh-huh.
All episodes were a location and a date.
Quantum Leap?
What do you think, Nick?
Young Indiana Jones Chronicles?
Yep, the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles.
Sure.
Which was actually a pretty good show, guys. All right.
I like the leap guess, though. Mm.
It is Nick's turn now.
Yes.
Remember the Monsters? Remember the Monsters, question mark.
Remember the Monsters. Fraggle Rock?
Wow.
You mentioned it moments ago. Dexter.
Oh. I refuse to believe the Dexter finale exists, so I'm not going to guess that one.
Sarah. What kind of day has it been?
Hint.
2014? Doesn't matter.
No.
Could be any.
2008.
Well.
Is the accurate.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Don't worry about the year.
Okay.
Multiple years for this question.
Okay.
What kind of day has it been? Has it been the kind of day where Sarah wasn't paying attention to other questions in this?
Well, that's why.
No, she was paying attention.
That's why I said the year mattered.
Yeah, I know, but you're confusing her by saying that because
frame
of reference.
Well, I guess I have two choices if the pattern continues, which it probably doesn't, but fuck it. Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
Yes.
Correct.
Nice.
Sports
really?
Night, yeah, the Sports Night series finale is called Quo Vadimus. And I only remember that because Danny McKechnie needed a sub that week, and that was the only episode I ever watched.
All right.
Yes.
A live day.
Who's that for?
For me.
Okay.
A live day, God. Oh, I know it. Hint.
2014. That's last year. Last year, Tara.
Yeah. I don't remember.
Enlisted.
Damn it!
Got to John screaming in the
know.
Car.
I know. Sorry, John. I knew it.
Okay, Nick. Jonathan Ross. Jonathan Ross.
Year?
2006. Additional hint. This is a good hint. All episodes named after a celeb who cameos on the episode.
Oh, that is a good hint.
Cameos.
Jonathan Ross.
Well, it's got to be British. No, I still don't know.
You're on the right track.
Extras?
Extras, correct.
Oh, okay.
All right, Sarah, put on your thinking cap. The Second Interview. The Second Interview.
The Second Interview. Yeah.
I know you watched this show.
Did I? Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. Could I have a year, please?
This year, 2015. The Second Interview.
You sure I watched this show?
I'm absolutely sure you watched this show, and possibly, well, yeah, definitely. It's going to give you more information, but that would be a little too much of a hint, I think.
My mind is completely emptied of shows.
They got you now. It's the Jinx.
Oh, of course.
All right. Tara?
Yeah.
His Visit, Day 9. His Visit, Day 9.
I'm going to just shoot the moon and hope I get it. Is it John from Cincinnati? Damn it!
Wow.
Fuck.
It's the only good that show ever did anybody.
Nicely done. All right, Nick.
Thanks.
Felix remarries. Felix remarries. Finale for what show?
The Odd Couple?
Nice. Correct. And now it is Sarah's turn. And Tara?
Yeah.
Remember when you were saying a... finale show, you're giving more information. Remind people what the name of that one was.
Quo Vadimus.
That is your hint, Sarah. I certainly hope you can get 2 points out of it.
Oh, I'd marry you all over again. Is it sports night?
Yes.
I didn't know.
I'm still
losing.
You're welcome. It's fine.
Okay, Tara.
Yeah.
The Bitch is Back.
Hint.
2007, The Bitch is Back. Gonna need an answer. Tara's letting out some air.
Just shoot me. I know that's not it.
Nick, do you know it? Got a guess?
Oh, is it Veronica Mars?
It is Veronica Mars, yeah.
Sure.
I only thought of it in the last second, yeah.
All right, let's hear the scores quickly.
Well, it's very suspenseful. Okay. Sarah has 15, and Nick and I are tied with 18 each.
Okay, everybody's last question coming up. Are you ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Nick. The Devil's Hands are idle playthings. Here's your hint. This is yours. That wasn't, or this is another one, rather. That wasn't the actual finale, as it turns out. But it was written as a finale.
The Devil's Hands are idle playthings.
Yeah.
Hint.
2003. So this show had this finale, but it turned out it wasn't the finale.
No, I have no idea.
Futurama. Oh. All right. Sarah.
Yep.
An American Girl in Paris, Part Deux.
Oh, I was waiting for this one. Sex in the City.
Correct.
Nice.
All right. Tara.
Yeah.
1 point gets you the game in the season.
Yep.
Your finale.
Mm-hmm.
Which ended up not being the finale.
Oh.
Ooh.
Your finale.
Yep.
Is called My Finale.
Scrubs?
That is good for 2 points. Congratulations. Shits and giggles time,
at last
guys.
It ends.
Four shits and giggles. Yep. First person to shout out the answer for this finale title.
Yep.
Gets 24 Dave points.
Oh, shit.
Ooh, okay. Ooh.
Day 8, 3 o'clock p.m. to 4 o'clock p.m.
24.
Tara just netted herself 24 points.
Are we? So good old Dave points. Do the Dave points reset now that the season is over?
Nope. Dave points carry on forever and ever unless I call for a collection and everybody wasn't keeping track of their Dave points. As punishment, Dave resets Dave points in that scenario.
Yes, I believe I've heard about that.
Tara. Congratulations, Tara.
Thanks, Tara.
You're the best around. Nothing's gonna keep you down. You're the best around. You want another season, yay.
Come back soon, Nick.
Wow, what a season, guys. That just went on and on. Well fought all around. Well, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We'll be back a week from now. No minis, remember. We are all domer for watching and trying to discuss one of the dumbest shows ever to be on television other than Dome. We tried to put that behind us as we went around the dial with stops at Key and Peele. Nick, remind me what yours was.
A History of Radness.
Humera Jackets, Humans, and Deutschland 83. We asked if your father being bumfunk with your mother's headless corpse was worse than jazz. Glenn Bristol made the close but unsuccessful case for Alias's Hourglass to be added to the Extra Hot Great canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was a winner of this week's series finale Game Time, and she clinches the season. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David Teekle, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
we're never out of the dome.
Sarah D. Bunting,
grab the correct leg, you ginger imbecile.
And Nick Reinwell Jones,
you married our agent, dumbass.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time, right here on Extra Hot Great.
Nothing good on television these days anyway.